The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great sounding podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks, and coming up on Columbia Calling later on, we'll be talking to Hannah Matthews, a British graduate who's making her life here in the UK. She puts pain to the rumour that it's difficult to make a life here in Colombia because this young lady is working as a journalist, working as an English teacher, and working in an NGO. So we'll be talking about how she came across these jobs, how she got legal employment and her documents in order, and also where you go to find accommodation in Bogota. So if you want to listen to this and more all about Bogota and Colombia, tune into Columbia Calling later on with me, your host, Richard McCall.
The world is a beautiful place, so listen up. The Overseas Radio Network.
We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. Get started today at podfly.net, and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great-sounding podcasts.
Ready to learn about a new life overseas? You're at the right place. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
Welcome to the show. It's Columbia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall. We're here in rainy Bogota. I always like to say it's sunny, but it's not. The weather has been abysmal these last few weeks. Anyway, it's raining in Bogota. The manhole covers are being blown out by the amount of rain that comes down the mountains. And yes, the roads become a chaos and there's accidents everywhere. So anyway, it's we're into that season now, and supposedly this weather is going to last up until June. I doubt it, but because they seem to get everything wrong, and we are in a high altitude area here, so anything can happen. Well, more or less, anything can happen, barring snow. This week, well, yes, what's been going on in Colombia? But of course, everyone's talking about the congressional elections, and how Santos, the vote counting swung massively in Santos's favor in the last sort of couple of hours, you know, overtaking the Centro Democrático, the Uribista party. So, and there are all sorts of claims of vote rigging and vote buying and so on and so forth. But so, you know, the scandals continue here in Colombia, and they continue all about the elections. And it wouldn't be Colombia without any of this intrigue and the political intrigue that is taking place. What else do we have in the elections? Well, you know that the opinion polls are out and saying that maybe even Peñalosa, a former mayor of Bogota and an urbanist, you know, someone who gets flown all around the world to sort of create urban designs and help cities out, help city planning and so on and so forth. Anyway, they're saying that he might actually pip Juan Manuel Santos, the incumbent, in the presidential elections. But of course, we've still got a long time to go. Personally, I don't see Peñalosa winning. I see it as quite a tight race between the Centro Democrático, so the Uribista party, and Santos. Of course, Santos is in power, and Santos controls the media. So, you know, he's got quite a lot of favor on his side in that way. But, you know, being in Bogotá, you cannot tell what else is going to happen in the rest of the country. And you would imagine that Medellin will vote towards Uribe because he is a son of that land. And, well, who knows what Cali will vote and who knows what Barranquilla will vote. So I imagine that the presidential advisors are working very hard in these regions and especially in the coast to secure the votes up there. Anyway, so it's all political intrigue, and really nothing's getting done here because everything is geared towards, so this 2014 is geared towards the elections. So while we wait and see, maybe some promises are being fulfilled by political machines out there who need the votes. But you can bet that it will continue. We haven't had a lot out of Cuba in the last few weeks either, where the peace dialogues are ongoing between the FARC guerrilla groups and the government. Most things have been going on about Venezuela, of course, you know, our neighbouring, our sister country here, with all the problems going on and pretty much a media blackout, especially an international media blackout, not to mention the national media blackout, because you can't see anything about the opposition and the protests taking place if you are watching it on Venezuelan television, because they've got that completely controlled. So here at Columbia Calling, we hope that everything is resolved swiftly and peacefully, and there's no more loss of life in Venezuela, because it's unnecessary. People should be allowed to demonstrate, and should be allowed to demonstrate without the risk of personal violence and harm. So we're going to be talking today with Hannah Matthews. Hannah is from the UK. She's been here a few months. She's a Columbia file, really. And, you know, she's really put paid to the rumour that it's difficult to make things happen here in Columbia. It's difficult to set up a life, because all you need is you know, drive. And Hannah holds a master's in human rights from a university in London, and she's also writing, you know, as a journalist for various magazines and publications. So she's working at an NGO. She's writing as a journalist, and she has a visa, you know, to work here legally, because she is an English teacher. So I mean, this is once a young lady with plenty of energy, of course, but she's managing three jobs. That means she's going up and down the city at all times. Managing three jobs, she found a place to live, she has a social life. You know, this is pretty impressive. It's impressive that someone can go out there and create a new life in a different country. So it takes a certain type of person, and that's why we got her on the show today, because it's interesting to have someone of this nature. You know, we're always whinging, we're always complaining, but Hannah's come here, and she wants to be here, and she wants to make a life of it, and she wants to help Colombia. So we're going to be talking all about this, and because of her background in human rights, we'll be talking about certain human rights and certain policies here in Colombia. Maybe even the opportunity to protest. What is the situation here in Colombia? If you can protest peacefully or not, do you have to get permission? So we're going to be talking about all these things, that, you know, how to get a job as an English teacher, how to get your visa, how to find a place where to live, how to, you know, get involved in an NGO or even start writing. I mean, with Hannah, we're going to be talking about it all. Of course, we'll have a political slant on it. I mean, this is a show about Colombia, and you can't not talk about politics. So I'm hoping this is a very interesting show for all of you out there. And I'd like to thank you again for those of you who are downloading this as a podcast or listening live, because our numbers continue to increase. And this is only positive because, you know, we are this is a very niche radio station, niche radio show. How many people want to tune in and listen about Colombia, and specifically about Colombia? So again, this is a big thank you. And of course, check out all of our various websites. We've got ColumbiaCallingRadio.com. You can check out my own personal blogs at RichardMcColl.com. And, you know, follow us on Twitter. That's at Columbia Calling. And you'll be kept abreast of all happenings here in Colombia, because I'm a media hound, and I try and read the whole internet every morning rather than doing any work. So yeah, you'll find us tweeting about the news and here and in the region, and finding out what's going on. So Again, a big thank you to all of you out there listening and downloading it. And don't go away, because we'll be coming right back with Hannah Matthews telling us how to make a life in Colombia. So I'm Richard McCall. This is Colombia. This is Colombia Calling. Don't go away.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Okay, you're not stupid. You see the handwriting on the wall. You're thinking about joining the millions of Americans who have already left the country. But where do you go? You don't want to make the mistake of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. You need accurate info to make one of the most important decisions of your life. You need EscapeTheUSAnow.com. You don't want to have regrets because your expat country collapsed due to crime, conflict, disease, famine, natural disaster, scarcity, war, or a government gone bad. Only at EscapeTheUSAnow.com will you discover the handful of countries that offer true freedoms and unbelievable opportunities that most people could only dream of. EscapeTheUSAnow.com is the information you cannot afford not to have. Information that took over 30 years to research, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, with more than a quarter of a million miles traveled. For less than $2.50 per month, you can have what may be the most life-saving information you have ever obtained. EscapeTheUSAnow.com, so you don't jump from the frying pan into the fire.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.justlanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's justlanded.com.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Colombia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house, find a job, find a doctor, start a business, invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at colombia.escapeartist.com, your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's colombia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
And yes, we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. And like always, we have a very special guest here on the show with us this afternoon. And it's today, it's Hannah Matthews, who is a, well, jack of all trades. She's doing everything to stay here, so she can stay here in Colombia. Now, there's a fair few of these types of people around, but Hannah is an exception to the rule, because she's really, you know, she's gone out there, she's got her visa, she's working for an NGO, she's teaching English, she's writing. I mean, you know, when she has time to enjoy herself, I'm sure she makes the most of that too. But I thought that it'd be very interesting to have a person of this nature on Colombia Calling, so that people out there can see that it is possible to make a life in Colombia. So, Hannah, welcome on the show.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Now, Hannah, I want to start by saying, first of all, how did you come to decide you wanted to live in Colombia?
Sure. So, good question. So I came travelling around South America 5 years ago, and I think, like a lot of people, I didn't know anything about Colombia, and I arrived and completely was blown away by it, fell in love with it, and went home and was just thinking about Colombia ever since. And so I went home and studied and just finished a master's in human rights, and I ended up focusing a lot of my studies on Colombia. I just became quite obsessed with Colombia. And then halfway through last year, I thought, you know, that's where I want to be. I booked my one-way ticket, and that's where I'm in.
And tell me a second. So you finished a master's in human rights. Of course, everybody knows that Colombia has some issues with human rights, so you're certainly going to find work out here. But were you working in the UK for an NGO based on human rights backgrounds?
Yes. Okay. I did some work for a couple of NGOs in London last year during my master's, who put me in touch with people in Colombia, and I found out a bit more about the Colombian context. But before I came, I got in touch with a load of NGOs that I thought looked interesting, and this is how I got some work with one called Comité Permanente por la Defensa de Derechos Humanos.
So the Permanent Committee for the Defense of Human Rights.
Excellent.
So you're working
CPDH.
For that.
CPDH.
They do love their acronyms here.
Yeah,
so the CPDH, and so you're working, how many days a week do you work there?
I go into the office, I try to go in twice a week,
mm-hmm.
But it's fine. I mean, they've given me a load of kind of research projects and bits and pieces that I can get on with, you know, outside of the office as well. So I try and go in a couple of times, but I'm doing stuff all the time.
Okay.
So I mean, at the moment I've just done a research project on the right to protest,
mm-hmm.
right to protest, which is quite sort of
quite polemic, right?
Topical issue.
Yeah. Now, do we have the right to protest here at the moment?
Yes, okay. We do. I mean, there's a couple of laws which slightly infringe on the right to protest, such as you can't block a street, you can't, you know,
without permission,
yeah. Exactly. But I mean, it's far, you know, we're in far better position here than in, for example, Venezuela, where you have to have permission for, you know, 50 million different people before you protest, which is illegal, you know, in terms of international law. But
sure. But yeah, I don't think Venezuela are doing anything
legally,
according to international law.
No, I think
And it's going to be a terrible situation, and it will affect Colombia immensely here. But we can move on to that in a few minutes. But so this right to protest, I think, find very interesting because, of course, last year we had the agricultural strikes, and there were marches almost every day beneath the window of my office. You know, I took photos and stuff. And then, of course, the education marches. And I mean, you know, I know that they have to get permission. So what you're saying is there's no... So that you can't have a spontaneous march.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's a bit of a difficult one because I understand, you know, I totally understand that you can't have protests all the time. You know,
yeah.
You can't, the things wouldn't work, things mm-hmm. wouldn't get done. But at the same time, you have to protect people's freedom of expression, freedom mm-hmm. of congregation, you know, rights to do these things, which are, yeah, political freedoms that we have.
Okay. And so that's one of the things you've been working on. And anything else?
I've done some trips with them outside of Bogotá. We went to Sumapaz, which is actually part of Bogotá, but it's sort of 2 hours away.
It's a high plateau national park area, which is the water source for Bogotá.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it's a completely different landscape than I've ever seen in Colombia. So, you know, it's so high, and it's got, I can't remember what those plants are called.
The farallones?
That's the one, yeah. You know, these amazing sort of huge, like cactus-like sort of plants. Bizarre scenery and very, very cold.
Yeah.
But we were going to investigate violations of humanitarian law. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, in the Paramo, there are 3,000 people living there, but over 5,000 soldiers. So it's this huge, huge military base, and you know, we're sort of investigating the problems due to that, and I found that fascinating because you're talking to real people.
So
you can study the theory, but when you actually see how things play out on the ground, I mean, that's why I'm here, really. So that's what
I think it's very important what you said there, seeing it on the ground, seeing it with your own eyes. You've got theory and you've got practice. We can study as much as we want, and you can speak from, let's say, a classroom or an office in London or in New York, but without having seen it, without having seen how the people live up there in Sumapaz, which is, you know, I can't even think, more than 3,000 metres, surely,
above sea level. Yes, yeah. I think it is. It's very different, you know,
yeah.
and a lot of these sort of farming practices are ancient farming practices, and, you know, they really know how to look after their land, and that's, you know, and then you meet with these people who are just being so... you know, negatively impacted mm-hmm. by the presence of this massive military. And yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to meet with people to sort of understand how things are happening on the ground. Absolutely.
And did you see there used to be an old pathway through there? It was called the Sendero de los Secuestrados.
That's where
FARC used to march out people that they kidnapped from Bogotá through Sumapaz.
And that's why there's such a huge military presence.
Justifies, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's not the same as it was 15, 20 years ago.
No, it's not the same.
Difference.
And I think, sorry,
yeah,
the thing what's interesting for me is that I'm fascinated by Colombia, I'm obsessed with Colombia, I've read a lot about it, but you still come with your own point of view, your own perspectives, and it's really interesting to have them challenged, you know, and actually... I went to Sumapaz thinking that we'd hear lots of accounts of, I'm not sure, sort of sexual violence or things like that, but actually the things that people sort of care about are all sort of expressed more clearly
mm-hmm.
as things like pollution, contamination of water sources, you know, very concrete, real sort of things, and it just challenges your perceptions a bit, and I think that's useful.
And What is the deal up there at the moment? Maybe you know, I don't. I've only read a little bit, but they want to mine up there, is that right? Is there something?
Oh, I'm not sure.
Which is it's an incredibly fragile environment ecosystem, which can't be touched. I mean, you never get it back. I worked for WWF back in the day, so I have my environmental, my slant, but Sumapaz is utter importance to Bogota. And that's what, rather than open pit mining something there, you need to realize what's going to happen, what's going to be the knock-on effect to the city.
Absolutely.
And Suba and Soacha, and not Suba, Soacha and Uzme and those areas, which are going to be the most directly hit.
Exactly. No, it's an important sort of place that people don't really know about. Mm-hmm. And especially, I didn't realize that it is part of Bogota. They are sort of, Alcaldía has a sort of mandate to look after this area. And so that's quite interesting in itself.
But it's a national park as well. And did you get to travel much around in the area, or just into the little communities up there?
Just a few little communities. We drove all the way through it, so we saw quite a lot of the scenery.
And what did the Colombian friends of yours say when you said you were going up to Sumapaz?
Yeah, people.
I know the answer. I already know the answer, but I need you to tell it.
Absolutely. People don't know anything about it, and it's considered, you just wouldn't go there. Why would you go there if you didn't have family there, or if you don't have any links? For me it was fascinating, really different to anything I've seen before.
I think very, very inspiring that you were involved in this, and that you're putting that master's to work in the place where it needs it most. So I think this is advice to those of you out there thinking of perhaps throwing in the towel back in the UK or the US or Canada or wherever, and it is possible to make a life overseas, but you need to find your niche. And of course, one key thing is you speak Spanish.
Absolutely.
You can't get around here without speaking Spanish.
No, you definitely can't. You definitely can't. I've found that people are very receptive to you offering yourself to work for them, I mean, what was useful at the beginning was that I said, obviously I speak Spanish, but I speak English fluently. And so I could do a lot of funding proposals and write, do things which are actually concretely useful for them. Because for me at the moment, I just feel like I'm a sponge. I just want to be absorbing information and finding out things. But there's a lot of organisations you can get involved with, lots doing very interesting work.
Okay, well, it's good to hear anyway. Listen, fantastic what you're doing. Really interesting that you were able to get out to Sumapaz and actually share a little bit of information about some situations here that I was unaware of. But we're gonna take a short break now, and we're not leaving you behind. We will come back in the next segment, and we'll start talking a bit more about your life and what you do, and again, more ideas for people out there who are thinking of coming to Colombia or looking to go overseas for a while. Anyway. So this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and don't go away.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. Is your adventure travel vacation in peril of being swamped by a lousy economy? We hope not. Everybody needs a vacation, preferably a whole bunch of them. Here are some ideas to save money before you throw in the towel on your vacation this year. The first way to save money with adventure travel is to do the research. Exhaustive research if you have time. Don't throw a dart at the globe and plan to head for where it sticks. Or if you do, at least figure out how to enjoy locals' prices once you get there. There's no reason to pay the outrageous tourist markup. With the internet, it's relatively easy to contact local bloggers and expatriates for the scoop on where to stay and eat and what to do to avoid high prices. The next idea applies to almost anything in life, but especially for adventure travel. Overestimate the cost and reduce spending. There you go, the secret to success in this life. Here's some good advice from Arnie Weissman, editor-in-chief of the publication Travel Weekly. Take half as many things as you packed and twice as much money. In addition to what you might carry as cash, have access to more via a credit card or debit card. While an exact prediction of when the plane ticket to your adventure destination will be at its absolute lowest is next to impossible, there is a method that should get you a good price. Begin checking prices about 2 months out. Repeat every few days to catch any downward fluctuations. When it hits a price you feel comfortable with, pull the trigger. and don't make the mistake of waiting until the very last minute. Once in a blue moon, it might get you an incredible deal. Most of the time, it gets you kicking yourself in the pants. And remember not to be so cheap that you miss out on the experience of a lifetime over a few measly dollars. If you're in Egypt and it costs $20 to see the pyramids up close and personal, don't fret that it's your entire expense budget for the day. Go see the pyramids. For more, visit JetSetterShow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
This is Kathleen Petticord and Leif Simon with the Live and Invest Overseas Minute on the Overseas Radio Network. Are you looking to rent overseas? Before you log online, here are some tips that can save you a lot of time and help ensure that you get the best deal possible on your rental wherever in the world you're looking to live.
So finding an apartment to rent overseas should be done at the local level. Looking on the internet, you're going to find English advertisements that are easier to find a rental for you, but those are going to be priced for the foreign market. To get to the local market, you want to get your feet on the ground and take a look.
Exactly. To get a good deal, you've got to shop beyond the internet market. And to do that, you've got to have your feet on the ground, either yours or those of a reliable local contact you trust. And you should enlist the help of an attorney to review the rental contract.
Also, you need to keep in mind that the local contract needs to be in the local language to be legal. So you'll want an English language translation, but you're going to have to sign a local language contract, especially in the Latin American countries.
For more information on making the leap overseas, visit us online at liveandinvestoverseas.com.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're talking to Hannah Matthews. We've been talking about human rights in Columbia because she's very knowledgeable in human rights, and having finished a master's in the UK on this, and now working for... You're going to have to repeat the acronym.
CPDH.
The Human Rights Protection and Human Rights NGO here in Colombia. With no disrespect to them, but it's just too much of a mouthful for me in Spanish at the moment. Now, also, in order to make your life here, you're doing what many people do, and they fall into it. So, you know, sometimes they want to, sometimes they don't want to, but you're teaching English.
Yes.
You've got to be able to share with us and share with the listeners a little bit about the realities of teaching English here in Colombia, in Bogota, is where we are at the moment. Because I imagine I've never fallen into teaching English here. It's not something I've looked for, but you know there are people who do it. And you know what's the pay like? How is it like getting a visa? All
sure,
of these things.
Sure.
Tell me something.
I mean, I heard before that it was an easy way to earn some money. And, you know, because they're looking for native speakers. You don't have... I mean, you know, ideal if you have your TEFL qualification or your CELTA, but you don't even have to have that. You know, people want to practice with native speakers, and I understand that. There are thousands of agencies and companies working with teaching English. And, I mean, because Colombia's becoming bilingual, they want to become bilingual, and you know, so it used to, people used to learn just at school, sort of basic level, but now you have to learn at university, and a lot of companies make you, you know, carry on with your learning when you actually get a job. Mm-hmm. And so I'm working for a couple of companies who do specific sort of business English courses, and I'm doing a couple of private lessons as well. Yeah, I mean, the pay ranges hugely. It really depends. I mean, you're looking at an average of, 30,000 pesos.
Around $15.
About $15 an hour, which isn't... Uh-huh. I mean, it's good, you know, it's well paid. I mean, you can get higher for... There's different types of English courses. I mean, I'm doing one in this law firm, and I'm doing a sort of human rights law, legal English. Mm-hmm. So I get paid a little bit more for that. Mm-hmm. But... I mean, in general, you know, as I said, lots of people want to practice with native speakers, so you will find work if that's what you're looking for. And, you know, for me, it's perfect because I can work in the mornings and in the evenings, and then I can have the day to, you know, get on with stuff I'm trying to do here.
So, I mean, do we know how... I don't know how the pay compares with any other Latin American country. Are you taught elsewhere?
No, I haven't. I'm not sure. I mean...
So I always considered Colombia to be... worse paid in terms of being English teacher. That's what I've heard. I mean, that's just the grapevine. That doesn't mean I'm right.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I mean, for me, it seems pretty. You know, it seems all right. I mean, it depends. I've got some friends who have more permanent sort of jobs in schools and universities, and then you get maybe more a bit of a higher salary or a more permanent salary at least. I mean, mine's a bit sort of hit and miss. Depends when people want glasses or not. But for me, that works.
Do they cancel a lot?
Some people cancel.
But you got a visa to be a teacher here. Yes. That's why you're here legitimately, yeah. Rather than being one of the masses of the great unfed out there who are
illegally. I tried, before I came, I looked into visas, and there was a volunteer's visa I could have got, which I was thinking about, but then I thought, well, then what happens when I come here and get some paid work, you know? So yeah. I thought, well, at least being in English, I think, I'm not sure how many other countries, but at least we get 3 months to, you know, sort of find your feet, decide on what you want to be doing. And so, and actually in the first couple of weeks, I found this one company who sponsored me for getting my visa, and actually it's pretty easy now. You know, you don't have to go abroad to get your visa anymore, so you can do it all from in Bogota. You just have to have your various bits and pieces, documents, and
the papers. Oh, well, that's good. Well, that's very positive to know that these entities exist. Absolutely. That are prepared to do it. But then, of course, you are. I guess you've got a year or 2 years. A worker contract or visa?
One year. You can get, there were different types. I mean, they're very used to, you know, foreigners coming in for a couple of months. And so they've got different types of visas you could get. I think there was some sort of benefits for getting a 1 year visa. You get some sort of bonus or, you know, hopefully at the end of the year or something. But I think there are different types of visas that you can find.
So, and what would you say, you know, because Bogota, it's not an easy city. Mm. I mean, there's no two ways about it. This is a city, as we've said previously on this show, and actually I think it was Caroline de Novoa, Doherty de Novoa, the author and in charge of embracebogota.com, who we had on the show very early on in our existence. She said, you know, Bogota makes you work for her affections, and I've used it. I've plagiarized that quote on a few occasions. But it's very good. It's very true. But one of the things, as an English teacher, you're expected to travel to your students. Now, traveling up and down and west and east in this city is not easy.
No, absolutely. And that is, the biggest pain of teaching English, to be honest. And I don't think, you know, you obviously don't know that when you first arrive. And it takes a bit of, I mean, I've been here 4 months now, so not too long. But, it's taken me that long to realise where everything is and kind of realise, where I want to be teaching. Because sometimes you can spend hours getting to where you're going, and, you know, you're only teaching for an hour.
So. Which kind of brings us nicely back to an original point, especially if they're protesting somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Then everything stops.
If they're blocking the Transmilenio, which is Bogota's sort of articulated bendy bus system, which is in dire need of an overhaul. Oh, on its own, it's fine. But it needs to be complemented with a greater public transport system around it. At the moment, it's all alone, and we rely on it heavily, and therefore it's collapsing, and people are protesting. We can get into a little bit about those protests. But anyway, so if you have to get up north or south, how long, on average, does it take you to get, let's say, to your furthest teaching gig? From home.
I think probably an hour.
An hour? It's quite a long time.
I think it's a long time.
For just an hour's...
Normally an hour and a half.
An hour and a half teaching time.
Yeah.
Still a long time.
It is a long time. It is. And it's not like, you know, you're commuting on a train where you can sit and do some work. Yeah. You know, it's normally standing up on the Transmilenio.
Yeah, you don't
so
get a seat.
You can't. Exactly. So it's not like you can do very much commute.
It's essentially 4.5 hours at the end. Hour there, hour back. Well, depending on where you're headed afterwards, because you might be headed close by to another teacher.
Yeah.
But that's a lot for an hour and a half.
Absolutely. And so you have to balance that, you know. And for me, I've just had to be honest with my English teaching and say, you know, look, this isn't actually the reason I'm here. I actually do enjoy a lot of my lessons, and, you know, I've got some really great students, and I've been able to have some really interesting conversations about what's going on in Colombia with them, which has been great for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the actual reason I'm here, you know. So I've got to be sort of strict with myself and strict with them. And if it takes me too long to get somewhere, I won't do it. But
yeah, I mean, I have friends who you know. You only teach, let's say, around the Calle 80, because they can walk with anything. You know,
they can walk there.
But after a while, then you pick and choose. You know, it takes your time. You've been here only a few months.
Exactly.
Now, the other thing about settling down in a new country, you've got your visa, you've got your job, so there's you've got income. You're spending time at this NGO, which is, of course, your passion.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me about how did you go about finding a place to live?
Oh, actually, I was very lucky. I originally stayed with my boss at the NGO for a week, which was very kind of him.
Very kind.
And he, And then I looked on Comparto Apto, which is a .com, mm-hmm. which is a website. I mean, in English equivalent, it's kind of like SpareRoom.com. It's a website where you can, you just find spare rooms in people's houses.
Yeah.
And I luckily looked at one, and that's where I'm living. I don't think that happens very often. I was lucky.
And the rent is fine, and your roommate is decent. It's not.
Yeah, I've got great roommates. Okay. I live with a really great Colombian girl, and at the moment we live with a French guy as well.
Oh, but it's cool to be in contact with both sides. You've got your European and your Colombian there.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
and you chose this on account of the location.
Well, a bit of everything, really. It's a great location. It's Deo Sequillo, which is, it kind of used to be the rich area of the city in the 50s, and it's pretty. It's really nice. I think it's a misunderstood or an unknown part of the city, really. But it's got sort of terracotta roofs, and it's very pretty.
It's also got some of those English style houses.
Yeah, exactly. You walk down some streets, you feel like you're in Surrey.
Which is, it does look like Surrey places. It's well. I know, but they were built by Chilean engineers for the British workers.
Right.
And the Chilean engineers have been trained up by BP. So that's why you've got these things. You've got that side to it. It's very interesting there, that sort of background to Teo Sequillo. But it's well located because
exactly,
you're sort of
right in the middle.
You're not far from downtown, you're not far from uptown or anything.
No, exactly. For me it's perfect really. And it's a really lovely flat. It's quite an old flat. It's nice.
Very good. So you've got it all sorted out. And that's what we're here to talk about because people always say about how difficult it is and I couldn't do that or there's nothing to do in Colombia or I can't get a job or the pay is not going to be great. But if you want to make it happen, and you can do it, right?
Absolutely. I completely agree with Caroline saying that it's, Bogota makes you work for its affection because, it's not handed out to you on a plate at all. You come from London and London, everything's easy. As in everywhere, all the kind of restaurants, museums, everything is in an area which is easily accessible. You know where everything is. In Bogota, you have to search around a bit and you have to find it. But for me, that was, so far, that's been really satisfying because I've found some really interesting places I really love this city. It's really interesting. There's a lot wrong with it, but there's a lot right with it.
Well, this is good to hear. And I go through what I call as the Colombia moment, where I have a little wobble, and then I fall back into love with the city when I go out to a first class restaurant.
Absolutely.
Or someone, a random act of kindness by a stranger or something. Yeah. Someone just saying hello on the street, which doesn't happen back in London anymore.
Absolutely.
So it's very positive. speaking to you, Hannah. Now, what we're going to do now, we're going to take a short break and we're going to come back, and because Hannah's in human rights and she's also a journalist, because we hadn't even got to mention this yet. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about what's been recently going on in Colombia with the elections and a little bit about Hannah's writing. So this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and don't go away.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control health care, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable healthcare, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Searching for freedom? The sustainable community in Chile is found at FreedomOrchard.com. Quiet, peaceful, and pristine are some of Freedom Orchard's outstanding features. Freedom Orchard offers recreational activities, organic farming, and self-sufficiency for water and electricity. Well-known Chile expert, free market economist, and radio host of Red Hot Chile, Dr. John Coben, is heading a team of developers, organic farmers, and seasoned professionals to make Freedom Orchard a reality. FreedomOrchard.com, for when you're serious about your freedom.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here with Hannah Matthews, and we've been talking everything from, the human rights NGO that she's been working for here in Colombia in the short period of time that she's been here, how it is to teach English as a foreigner to Colombians, and of course finding a finding a place to live. So all very useful snippets of information for those of you out there thinking of coming to Colombia. But I think we can't progress this week without talking about last week's, what happened here in Colombia. And I'm sure I mentioned it, my memory serves me right. We had congressional and Senate elections the other weekend. That's 2 weekends ago now. And the results came through, and the Santos Party came out winning just in the congressional seats and Senate seats. The U Party, that's the current president. And a new party, which I would say, I will refrain from saying far right, but they call themselves the Centro Democratico. Anyone who puts the name Democratic into any of their titles are never Democratic. Because you've got the Democratic Republic of North Korea. Korea and the Democratic Republic of Korea, but it got the Centro Democratico, which is the new sort of conservative or ultra-conservative group, political party set up by the former president Alvaro Uribe, and he came in a close second. But
a few seats.
Yeah, I mean it's really kind of amazing. And then the rest are all sort of scattered around between conservatives and liberals and others, and there'll be all sorts of coalitions. They're all behind closed doors doing all sorts of things. But Hannah knows about this stuff too, because you know she's involved in human rights and politics and writing. So I just thought it'd be interesting to focus a little bit. Recently you wrote a piece for a magazine, I think in the UK, about a politician called Aida Abella. And you know, it's very important to note that she ran in these elections and for a party which was kind of previously defunct or, you know, disappeared almost as well, called the Unión Patriótica. So it's like the Patriotic Union. Do you want to give me a little bit of history about this?
Absolutely. Thank you. I was drawn to write about the Unión Patriótica because I think they're a really interesting case study for how Colombia treats opposition parties and how, you know, this liberal democracy that Colombia always maintains that it is, how they treat opposing voices. And so the Unión Patriótica, the UPE, was set up in 1985 after it was set up originally as a sort of coalition between FARC and the Communist Party of Colombia. And so they've always had this quite radical image.
Yeah.
But since their founding, they've been victim of unbelievable violence, huge violence, which has caused sort of the death of over 5,000 of their supporters and members, which eventually caused the, you know, literal death, but also figurative death of the party in 2002. And this is the first year which the party has got their legal personality back. Mm-hmm. So basically, in Colombia, there's a threshold law where you have to get 3% of the votes. So I think it's 350,000 votes or something. And if you don't get that, you lose this legal personality. And so anyway, they've got this legal personality back, and this is the first time they'll be running for presidency in the presidential elections in over 10 years. And so I wanted to write about this. I wanted to write about their struggle, and but also about Aida Abella, who's the presidential candidate for this party. Mm-hmm. She is an amazing woman. She was in exile in Switzerland for 17 years. Mm-hmm. She only came back in September of 2013, and she's a symbol of resistance, a symbol of peace. You know, she's tackling a country where who has a deep, deep mistrust of the left. You know, anything left is sort of communist and sort of Cold War mentalities. Of, you know, and so she's showing a real potential, you know, alternative to the kind of traditional power blocks of Colombia. You know, she's very supportive of the peace process and inclusion, and she's a very interesting lady. I mean, they're not going to win, but it's an interesting, I think it's an interesting case study to see how they're being treated.
It's having that voice there is an important you know, situation. Of course, Aida Abella also survived an attempt on her life just a couple of weeks ago. She was out in the bordering state of Arauca, which borders Venezuela. It's a very troubled state for guerrillas and paramilitaries. There's a lot of coca growing and transshipment of arms and everything, and there's oil and you name it, they've got it there, basically. The Ministry of Defense came out saying that it was a combined attack by the ELN guerrillas and the FARC, which I you know, okay, I may be speaking out of turn, but it would seem to me a little bit strange that they would want to, you know, try and cut down Aida Vea in a volley of bullets when she's
Absolutely.
More or less representing, you know, she's representing a lot of their politics.
Absolutely.
You know,
so Absolutely. No, I mean, it's classic. It's classic what Colombia does here. You know, as soon as anything happens, they get labelled a terrorist. And no, and the, I mean, the issue with that attack was, you know, I'm talking to even my boss at the NGO about this, and I was saying, well, you know, will they increase Aida's security? And he was saying they can't. You know, she's got masses of security. She had this huge 7-car convoy. The issue is, you know, will they investigate who attacked her? Because, you know, if not, then this is going to carry on. And for me, I mean, this is another reason I wanted to write about the UPE, is that for the case of for the security of these opposing parties, they need visibility. You know, and the more people who know about their struggles and what they're doing, and then the more secure they'll be, and the more, and hopefully the less incidents, you know, like this we'll see leading up to the elections.
So you take the UP, you know, as a historical context, and here's coming into my sort of master's type thing in conflict resolutions, but
yes.
You take the UP, 1985, you know, a lot of former guerrillas, you know, they put the demobilized, became political activists and politicians, and of course then they were targeted. So you're saying that 5,000 odd plus,
yep.
It's more than that, who were killed off, you know, actually summarily, you know, picked out and executed, really. But of course, the knock-on effect from that, you know, not from 1985 to 1990 in the worst years, is of course now with these peace dialogues going on in Cuba, why would the FARC guerrillas sit down and think that they can negotiate and then have political participation if the same events are going to take place again?
Exactly. And that's exactly why I wanted to write about this kind of thing, because it's the time, you know, Colombia is on the verge of massive, massive change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only is it opening up to the world in terms of business, in terms of tourism, but yeah, hopefully we will see, you know, in the next year, an actual, you know, political solution to this conflict, which, as you say, has to allow
yeah.
FARC to enter into politics. A hugely, hugely controversial issue, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people, I think in general, I get the impression that people are for the peace talks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants, people in general, people want a politically negotiated solution to peace, but the majority are not for, you know, FARC integrating seamlessly into Colombian politics. And so, exactly, I think this idea of how Colombia in the past has treated opposing parties and how they continue to view opposing voices is crucial. I mean, you know, if you are heralded as this liberal democracy, you have to be seen as taking into account views from across the political spectrum, and, you know, and protecting everyone's right to express these views.
Exactly that. Now we'll move on for a little bit from the UP and just talk a little bit about, I mean, these elections 2 weeks ago were just scandalous. Was it a 65% abstention
rate?
Something
like that. I mean, it's less than, yeah, it's a third of people who could vote turn up.
And you know, and this is a highly politicized country. There's,
mm-hmm.
you know, there is a vibrant political debate here. It's not like being in the UK where,
yeah.
Whatever, you know, it's or Labour or Tories or whatever. Here it's vibrant, and yet the people didn't vote.
What I've witnessed in terms of people abstaining is that I don't think people put two and two together that, you know, they there's this big political debate, there's a lot of civil society sort of getting involved in these protests and issues, you know, and everyone does know about what's going on,
mm-hmm.
but they don't put that together with voting, because voting seems, well, this is what I see from my friends, is that they see that as voting for these politicians who, I mean, you know, I can't blame them. You look at these politicians who each one after the next is worse than the last, you know, in terms of stealing money from the public, in terms of corruption, you know, so many scandals. And I think people would prefer, you know, it's not out of apathy that people aren't voting. Well, a lot of the time.
Mm.
I think it's out of genuine, you know, concern that they will not, their vote will not mean anything.
It won't transform anything.
No, it won't transform. They're not represented by anyone. It's not, exactly. And so, you know, it's a difficult situation. Then not only that, but then you've got, you know, I think it's over 850 accounts of irregularities and accounts of fraud. You know, horrendously corrupt.
Yeah, and then you've got, I mean, you've got, I had a look at the brochure, the sort of, the, you know, you take in there to vote on. Do you know how complicated?
This is what I've heard. People don't know how to even fill in the forms.
It's easier to do your voto en blanco, vote for, you know, make your abstention vote. Or if you make any error, then your vote is also, is made illegitimate. Yeah. So it serves those already in power from the big parties.
Absolutely.
You know, of course, you're going to recognise the president's party. You're going to recognise Uribe. So these, these figures they stand to win always.
Absolutely.
Out of this. So it's kind of shocking, really.
It is shocking. And it's shocking because, I don't know, I mean, probably the same as you, Richard, like when you're writing about these issues and you're researching and you're hearing about theories, I keep thinking, oh, Colombia's moving forward, Colombia's really moving forward. Look at all these different laws they've got, very interesting. And then you see an event like this and you just think, this is so corrupt, and but everyone accepts it, and that's what I think I'm finding a bit struggling.
And the corruption that they're calling it, the vote buying, the term for clientelism in and stuff is marmalade, jam.
Yeah.
How dare you sully the good name of jam?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just think it's such an innocent thing. It's such a childhood thing. It's almost like a Winnie the Pooh thing, jam, and yet it's being made out to people getting all dipping their fingers in the honeypot type thing. But yeah, violence was massively down, but that's because the country was militarized.
Mm.
I mean, it really was for the elections. I've never seen it, and we had used to live up in North Manhattan in New York for a while, not far from the Bronx, and it was the ghetto choppers that used to come over. That's what we used to call them. Here we had the police, helicopters continually zipping around. So it was kind of on edge a little bit. Absolutely. It was a weird feeling going on, and I haven't felt that. But yes, violence was down. Of course, the politicians praise themselves for that because it must be a success story because Colombia's democracy is increasing and is vibrant and what I keep saying. But if you're getting 65% of people not voting, then that's not a healthy democracy because you don't think it works.
No, absolutely, absolutely. No one believes in the system. No one trusts anyone who's in the system. I had an interesting. I taught an English lesson about this sort of issues. I was trying to sort of rouse debate in my classes, and I showed them the clip of, I'm not sure if you saw this, a comedian in England, Russell Brand, was interviewed by.
Jeremy Paxman.
He was grilled because Russell Brand has never voted, and so he was saying, I don't vote because I don't believe in the system, essentially what happens here. And I showed this to my students and I said, why is this controversial? And it took a while for them to say, because he's saying not to vote, because here it's not obvious, and then these are these people who are in this, these lawyers or whatever. It's not, I don't know, I didn't get the impression that it was a sort of obligatory thing, voting. Even it was sort of just people are just tired of corruption. And
well, that's what I think. I think there is a great big, I don't think there's an apathy to it. I just think it's a lethargy. It's like, why would I do it?
Nothing's changing.
And then of course you've got the whole, what's it called, the lay sec, the dry law, so you can't drink the night before and the day off. So everyone stockpiles booze the night before, has a massive party. Those who vote hungover, and those who don't vote are still partying. And quite a lot of cartoons came out about that, which were very good. It's like, I wouldn't vote for you sober, so why would I vote for you drunk? It's like that sort of thing. But anyway, fascinating times in Colombia, and Hannah, it's been a real pleasure talking to you and hearing your perspective on these things. And I hope that the listeners out there have enjoyed this and learning about the different political party and the role of an NGO here in Colombia. And we wish you all the best with the continuing English classes and journalism and NGO and please spread the word, everyone out there, about Colombia Calling.
Absolutely, thanks very much, Richard.
You're very welcome. Check us out at www.columbiacallingradio.com, and of course we're on iTunes, and these interviews go out on Monday. So
live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.